is VOA News in Washington. I'm Jeff Custer. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pledged once again Tuesday to launch a military incursion into Rafah, a Gaza city sheltering hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians amidst international calls for restraint. Speaking to a meeting of Israeli families of fallen soldiers and hostages held in Gaza, who support a strong military response, Netanyahu said Israel would enter Rafah to destroy Hamas battalions there with or without a ceasefire agreement in place. Israel and Hamas are negotiating a ceasefire agreement meant to free hostages and bring home some relief to the nearly seven-month-long war. Speaking to a meeting of the World Economic Forum in Cairo Monday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reiterated U.S. opposition military assault on Rafah.
We've said clearly and for some time now on Rafah that in the absence of a plan to ensure that civilians will not be harmed, we can't support a major military operation in Rafah.
The White House has reacted to news Tuesday that dozens of protesters on the campus of Columbia University in New York City have taken over a university building, barricading the entrances and unfurling a Palestinian flag out a window, and the latest escalation of demonstrations against the Israel-Hamas war that have spread to college campuses nationwide. Speaking to reporters Tuesday, National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the White House continues to support free speech and the right to protest policies and ideas with which you may disagree.
You just got to do it peacefully. You can't hurt anybody, and you can't, in this case, like, you can't be disrupting the educational pursuit of your fellow students. They have a right to go to school, and they have a right to do so safely. They have a right to get an education, and taking over a building by force is unacceptable.
Haiti's seven-member transitional council will vote Tuesday for the country's next president, a week after it formally assumed power in the chaotic Caribbean nation. This is VOA News. The United Nations International Court of Justice Tuesday rejected a request by Nicaragua for judges to order to halt military and other aid to Israel from Germany. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Nawaf Salam, president of the International Court of Justice, rules legal conditions for making such an order weren't met, and so the courts rejected the request.
The court finds that the circumstances, as they now present themselves to the court, are not such as to require the exercise of its power under Article 41 of the statute to indicate provisional measures.
However, the 16-judge panel declined to throw out the case altogether. Nicaragua, a long-standing ally of the Palestinians, had alleged Germany's enabling genocide by sending arms and other support to Israel. But Germany argued back it has barely exported any weapons to Israel since the offensive against Gaza began. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Police in London say a 13-year-old boy was killed when a man wielding a sword attacked members of the public and two police officers Tuesday in East London. VOA's Henry Ridgewell talked to the police and had this report.
7 a.m. local time this morning, they were called to Hainault, which is in northeast London, of reports of a man wielding what looked like a samurai sword, having crashed a car into a house, was going on the rampage in this area of London and looking to attack local residents. The police said that they arrived on the scene, around a dozen officers, and the suspect was on the roof of a garage of one of those properties. The officers shouted at him to come down. He refused to comply, and so they tasered him and then managed to arrest him. And the police very sadly confirmed that one of the victims of the attack, a 13-year-old boy, had died from his injuries.
That was VOA's Henry Ridgewell reporting. Police say the attack was not terror-related. A Kenyan startup company, Magic Water, is producing water for dry communities using an Indian-built device that can draw it directly from humidity in the air. Victoria Humunga reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The device, made by the Watek company in India, pulls humidity from the atmosphere using an industrial fan. The moisture is trapped in silica gel before it's condensed using refrigerating gas that creates liquid water. The founder, Beth Koigi, says the generators can produce up to 500 liters of water a day.
Drought season are becoming quite regular, and the whole purpose for these systems is to enable communities to access clean drinking water without depending on the traditional water sources.
At least 25 water generators paid for by humanitarian organizations have been distributed to vulnerable communities. Victoria Amunga, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Washington, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There's no sufficient evidence to show that maybe those groups begin to decline after the killing of their strategic leaders. But I think it's a symbolic victory, particularly for the military government in Mali.
That's Oluwole Ojuwale from the Senegal-based Institute of Security Studies on Mali's military government killing a senior Islamic State commander. Details coming up. Also, the death toll from recent floods in Kenya has risen to at least 170. And a senior UK minister says the government expects to deport nearly 6,000 migrants to Rwanda this year. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Kenyan officials have said the recent floods have claimed the lives of almost 170 people, while more than 200,000 people have been affected by the disaster. As a result of the floods, houses in flood-prone areas have been submerged, causing people to seek refuge in schools. Kenyan President William Ruto has taken action in this crisis, leading an emergency cabinet meeting to strategize the government's response. Earlier today, the cabinet ordered mandatory evacuations for those living in flood-prone areas, and the military will be sent to help people leave. However, many people in the country say the government has moved too slowly to help people. To better understand the situation, VOA's Paul Ndiho interviewed Jack Oduor, a community organizer in the Matare slums in Nairobi, who shared the devastating impact of the floods on his community.
We are in Mathare. This is a river that caused a lot of havoc. And we are trying to do a rescue mission for us to be able to get people off this location. So currently we have cases of 15 deaths that were caused. This river busted, and all these you see, all these locations used to have people's houses, they have all gone. And you see the other side, all this, those are the seawater flooding. So things are not right. And the other side, I'll show you where we have a lot of houses that have been swept away. I have with me about 5,000 households that people that have their houses were swept away. And it's not a good scene. As Transformers Organization, we're trying to get the correct data so they can have a humanitarian support to give them I can call it a decent living and a harmonious location for them to get their life started.
Are you a community leader in that area? What are you and your people trying to do to help these people who are in need?
Well, you know, as I told you earlier, we've lost 15 people that are confirmed. And that is sad. We are, you know, losing a life because of the flood at the middle of the night is really strong. So as Transformers Organization, we've set up our call center. We are receiving donations for what we've done so far. We're receiving donations, but we're not giving all the donations. We only gave grains, the food stuff. But for the few, we only provided 50 blankets. But through friends, we've gotten over 200 blankets now. But what we talk about, we need now to have a clear identity, data verification. We go to the house to house. So from yesterday, we've been taking data, critical data, that we have it in our space. And not only sending this data, we go. Like I've been to this house, every doorstep, getting their data and sending even to the friends that were able to support. Some have come that they would like to support, and we are even calling for the medical teams to come and, you know, maybe you can only provide the food, but that people who are doctors, you know, nurses can come and provide. The children are here suffering, you know, food. That's what we are trying to do, just bring everybody on board. And
earlier today, President Ruto convened a cabinet meeting following the floods. They are trying to figure out how to respond to some areas that have been hit so hard, affected, like your place that you're speaking from. Isn't that a way of showing that they care? The government is trying to help the people in need.
Well, I would tell you, it's easy saying than done. You know, the government talks. I'm not a guy of talks. I need action to be taken place. I need to see that what they said is being implemented. They're not implementing anything. It's almost a week now, because this thing happened on Wednesday, and now we are on Tuesday, and almost a week. What have they done? There's no even, these people do not even have insurance covers. So how will they say that they want to be active when after the occurrence of an event? This should be planned, that they know we have this number of slums, and what is the projection? Yes, we need to get them out of that space. They haven't even come. Even now, are you seeing any government vehicle here, or any person from the Ministry of local government? They're not here. We are all here trying to get all these things. Eh? So it's a lot of talk, and it's high time we get out of the talks and we start actual implementation of what the treaties that we make.
And that was Jack Oduor, a community organizer in the Matere slums in Nairobi, speaking to VOA's Paul Indio. U.S. officials are negotiating the removal of American troops from Niger after the country's military junta ended a long-standing pact. Niger is the latest Sahel country to eject Western forces and replace them with Russian troops. Some regional analysts say similar moves have not improved military security for Niger's neighbors, Mali and Burkina Faso. Henry Wilkins reports.
The U.S. State Department said Wednesday that U.S. officials in Niger were negotiating the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the country. 2 weeks earlier, Russian troops arrived in Niger's capital, Niamey, to offer security support in the country's nine-year-old conflict with militants linked to Islamic State Group and Al-Qaeda. Niger is the latest Sahel country fighting an insurgency to eject Western forces and replace them with Russian troops after neighbouring Burkina Faso and Mali. One analyst told VOA the move was unlikely to improve security, however. Bakary Sambay is with the Timbuktu Institute's African Centre for Peace Studies in Mali. He says that Mali chasing away France only to replace it with Russia is not a sign of sovereignty. On the contrary, he says Mali has delegated its sovereignty even further. He says he doesn't believe Russia can provide significant assistance. Data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project shows that deadly violence continued to rise after Russian troops arrived in Mali in December of 2021. Deaths from conflict more than doubled in 2022 from the year before. In Burkina Faso, conflict deaths doubled in 2023, the year France withdrew. Russian troops arrived in January 2024. Nonetheless, anti-Western sentiment has risen across the Sahel in recent years, in particular against France, the former colonial power in the region. Hassane Kone of the Institute for Security Studies, an Africa-based think tank, said the anti-Western sentiment derives from the principle that the presence of Western troops, who have been there for around 10 years, has not succeeded in reversing the trend of violence. Conspiracy theories that Western forces are assisting militants are also rife in the Sahel, in part due to Russian disinformation campaigns, experts say. International media have reported the departure of US troops as a victory for Russian geopolitical interests. But Kone says it's about Niger's right to choose its partners. He says he doesn't see it as a victory for Russia and finds that interpretation simplistic because Niger is a sovereign country. Both analysts VOA spoke to agree that America's departure will leave big gaps in Niger's ability to conduct military operations, particularly in intelligence gathering. Not all American troops may be withdrawing, a top U.S. military official told the Associated Press on Thursday. He said that negotiations with Niger are ongoing. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Mali's military government says its forces have killed a senior Islamic State commander, Abu Huzaifa, during a joint operation with Burkina Faso and Niger. Huzaifa, who had a $5 million bounty on his head, had been linked to high-profile attacks in Africa's Sahel region, including the killing of 4 U.S. soldiers. Some experts say the junta will use this success to justify its stay in power. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
Malian authorities said Monday their forces killed Islamic State commander Abu Huzaifa in a security operation in the northern region of Menaka. Huzaifa, a Moroccan, was wanted for acts of terrorism and the deaths of civilians and security officers, including four U.S. soldiers killed in Niger in 2017. Olawale Ojoale is a regional coordinator at the Senegal-based Institute of Security Studies. He says the killing of a terror commander does not equate to the end of terrorism.
It is always celebrated within the security community and the communities that they have also terrorized. But there's no sufficient evidence to show that maybe those groups begin to decline after the killing of their strategic leaders. But I think it's a symbolic victory, particularly for the military government in Mali. In the context of the security rearrangement that has been going on in that region for a while now since they came into power, the taking of Kidal, and this particular one.
The killing comes several weeks after Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger formed a joint force to fight the insurgent groups. The three West African nations are battling terror threats and attacks by groups affiliated with Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Experts say the killing of a terror group leader rarely changes the attacks against civilians and security forces. David Otto, head of security and defense analysis with the Geneva Center for Africa Security and Strategic Studies, says the ability of Islamic State to launch more attacks and remain a threat will depend on how Abu Huzaifa ran the group's affairs.
It depends on the structural or how centralized the leadership was of the Sahel province. So if he had all the power, then of course it would disrupt at the strategic level and may have some operational, impact, negative to what the group wants to achieve. But if he were to have commanders that, were already in line of succession, then of course it's just going to be a new replacement. Now, the problem is that the new man could be more dangerous than himself. But it could also be a much more weaker leader.
Attacks by terror groups have killed thousands and displaced more than 500,000 people from their homes in the Sahel in recent years. They are accused of committing human rights violations against the population living in areas under their control. Just like in Burkina Faso and Niger, Mali's military overthrew the civilian-led government, accusing it of failing to effectively fight the jihadists. Political and media freedoms have been shrinking in Mali for years, but Ojoale fears the military junta will use the killing of a commander to further suppress critical voices.
It's a symbolic victory for them, and they can use that to justify their stay in power. There is a constant erosion of civil liberty. Just a few days ago, they are locking the media out, which is a complete blackout. That has happened in Mali, that is happening in Burkina Faso, that is also happening in Niger. Opposition dissenting voices cannot express themselves. To the extent to which that is taking place, then we can't give them thumb up for whatever they are doing.
Mali's government ordered French troops to leave the country 2022 and for the UN mission to close its mission in the country last year. Meantime, it formed closer relations with the Russian government and the Wagner mercenary group. Now, with the killing of the IS commander, regional experts say the prospect of the military returning power to a civilian government seems distant. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
A senior UK minister says the government expects to deport nearly 6,000 migrants to Rwanda this year after the plan aimed at deterring migrant arrivals on small boats became law. Quoting the Interior Ministry, the French news agency AFP reports, Rwanda has in principle agreed to accept 5,700 migrants already in the UK. Of those, 2,143 can be located for detention before being flown to Rwanda. Health Secretary Victoria Atkins said law enforcement agencies will find the rest. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Zambia's Corruption Perception Index has improved for the first time in a decade, according to Transparency International Zambia. The country's authorities say their commitment to strengthening the rule of law and justice in the fight against corruption has paid off. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
Transparency International Zambia Chapter Executive Director Maurice Nyambe told VOA in Lusaka that the Corruption Perception Index is a critical research conducted at a global scale. It is currently the most widely used measure of public sector corruption across the world.
Zambia has actually improved by 4 points in terms of the score. Now, the CPI score runs on a continuum from 0 to 100. And basically, the simple explanation is that zero means you are very bad in terms of corruption, the worst of the worst. And then 100 means you are very clean as a country in terms of corruption. So over the last 10 years, Zambia has been, first of all, declining. And then specifically for the last 3 years, we have had a constant score of 33 out of 100. And so now we have improved to 37.
According to Transparency International, the Corruption Perception Index, or CPI, is used to rank countries by their perceived levels of public sector corruption as determined by expert assessments and opinion surveys. The CPI defines corruption as an abuse of entrusted power for private gain. A 2023 IMF diagnostic report on Zambian governance and corruption indicates that corruption is believed to have inflated the costs of numerous high-profile tenders and construction projects during President Edgar Chagwalungu's tenure between 2015 and 2021. It further states that huge financial resources invested in infrastructure projects such as road construction have been identified as providing avenues for corruption. Besides impacting the economy, the Zambia National Women's Lobby, an NGO championing gender equality, states that female leaders in Zambia have encountered significant barriers to political participation due to corruption. Executive Director Juliet Chibota says the new Corruption Perception Index is now responding to concerns by female leaders.
It's now responding to what we have been advocating for. We have been advocating for corruption to reduce so that women operate freely in an environment which is corruption-free. Because corruption reduces the number of women to participate in leadership and governance processes.
Felix Nkulukusa, Zambia's Secretary to the Treasury, reiterated his government's commitment towards the fight against corruption at a recent meeting in Washington.
We have established the inter-agency collaboration for asset recovery, where in addition to the Anti-Corruption Commission, we have identified about 21 institutions, some of them in the law enforcement, others in other areas that are collaborating together to try and recover all the assets that have been gotten through corruption.
Critics of President Hakainde Hichilema have charged that arrests on corruption allegations have only been targeting political opponents, describing it as a witch hunt of the previous regime. The Zambian president insists that the fight against corruption is not meant to victimize his political opponents. In 2022, Zambian authorities set up the Economic and Financial Crimes Court to fast-track corruption cases. No convictions have been secured thus far. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
The U.S. envoy to the United Nations says Washington is appealing to all countries to stop support for Sudan's warring parties, warning that a crisis of epic proportions is brewing. War erupted a year ago between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, creating the world's largest displacement crisis. The UN has voiced concern about a possible imminent RSF attack on Al-Fashir in Sudan's northern Darfur region. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Linda Thomas-Greenfield told reporters on Monday that Al-Fashir was on the precipice of a large-scale massacre. Reuters says she added that history is repeating itself in Darfur in the worst possible way.
U.S.
U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump is planning to campaign in the Midwest state of Michigan this week. It's one of a handful of states that could swing the results of November's presidential election. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Voters in Michigan chose Donald Trump in 2016, but Joe Biden in 2020. It's a state both campaigns believe they can win this November. Part of Trump's approach in Michigan is winning over auto workers whose jobs, he says, are threatened by Biden renewable energy plans, including subsidies for electric vehicles. It's a message he's bringing to a rally in central Michigan Wednesday.
We'll be in Michigan, a state that he's destroyed because of the auto industry. We're not going to have any jobs left in Michigan, no auto jobs left in Michigan. They're all going over to China and other places with this ridiculous EV mandate, electric vehicle mandate.
The main union representing auto workers in Michigan endorsed Biden over Trump. Paul Torrente is a union representative.
Donald Trump most likely has the support of big corporations in Michigan because they are the ones that actually hold the working class down. So for him to actually say that he has Michigan, he doesn't have the working people in Michigan. He has the 1%.
That's a message Biden is using to keep union household voters, who an NBC News poll says still favor him over Trump. But by a smaller margin than 4 years ago.
Donald Trump's vision of America is one of revenge and retribution. A defeated former president who sees the world from Mar-a-Lago and bows down to billionaires, who looks down on American union workers. It's not just he's not supported, he looks down on us.
A potential liability for Biden in Michigan are traditionally Democratic voters who oppose his support for Israel in the war in Gaza. Omar Suleiman is an imam at the Islamic Center of Detroit.
He is intentionally, I think, pursuing a policy that is not only inhumane and disgusting to everyone that hoped for something different, but will be consequential in November 2024.
In Michigan's Adams Township, voters believe Biden has mishandled immigration and lost control of the border, says Township Supervisor Randy Johnson.
Look how many, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but look how many people came in. Look how many people we didn't know came in. Look how many bad people came in. Trump's wall would have isolated all that.
Trump says Michiganders are tired of Biden.
This November, the great state of Michigan is going to tell crooked Joe Biden, you're fired, get the hell out of here.
Biden says it's the strength of labor unions that will help him win re-election.
You're the best in the world. You know, you had my back in 2020, and because of you, I'm standing here as president of the United States of America, because of you. And that's a fact. Because of you, in 2024, we're going to make Donald Trump a loser again.
A CBS News poll of Michigan voters last week found Biden has a slim lead over Trump, with nearly two-thirds of Michiganders saying voting for president this year matters more than it did 4 years ago. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Audrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.